Sunday that I mentioned Proverbs, by its nature, it demands a topical approach. We can't go through it verse by verse. Okay? So I've basically divided the book into 20 topics, more or less. So quite a number. Okay? And as I go through these different topics, if I feel that there's too much information to cover one Sunday, obviously I'll extend the topic. But we'll be camped out here in Proverbs for some time, in either case, okay? But Proverbs is great. It's so practical, okay? And we live in a time where wisdom is so necessary, okay? Wisdom has always been needed, but each year brings new challenges. I think we would all agree. Good old Benjamin Franklin, he once said that life's tragedy is that we get old too soon and wise too late, okay? Along similar lines, my dad, he always had a saying. I don't know if he copied this from somewhere or if it was just him. He said, with age comes wisdom, but sometimes age comes alone. Right? Wisdom, no matter your age, it's always necessary. It takes a skill, a certain skill, to acquire it. It does not necessarily come with gray hair. Okay? But I guess the question is, before we go on, what is wisdom? Okay, that's what Proverbs is all about. I think we all know that. But what exactly is wisdom? I'll give you my own personal definition first. I would say that, simply put, wisdom is the ability to do life God's way. The ability to do life God's way. My own short little definition, okay? One commentator, if you like scholarly definitions, I'll give you two. One says that wisdom is a concept that seeks to bring all of life's activities into harmony with God's created order. A concept that seeks to bring all of life's activities into harmony with God's created order. And here's another definition. If you like commentaries, if you're into that, there's a guy named Bruce Waltke. He has a very good commentary on Proverbs. He says, wisdom denotes the skill to navigate through the maze of life so that one conducts one's life to the greatest benefit of oneself and the community. Okay, navigating through the maze of life to conduct oneself to the greatest benefit of oneself and the community, but in an eternal sense. That was his point there. But I personally like my short little definition, doing life God's way. Okay, but as you can see from these definitions, wisdom encompasses all areas, really, of life. Okay, other words, we'll see other words in the book of Proverbs. Okay, we'll see words like insight, understanding, instruction, discernment. Okay, these are all sort of synonymous with wisdom, and they're really, I could say, facets, different facets of this concept of wisdom. Okay, you'll be hearing that quite frequently in the book. In any case, the book of Proverbs, it sticks to the details, the practical details of life. So different topics we'll be talking about include things like the mouth, how we use our words, conflicts, laziness, honesty, generosity, parenting, and the list goes on. So I pray that these next few months are very beneficial for us as a congregation. The plan for today, though, is more teaching-oriented in nature, so I might not be as excited as I normally would be, but I'll be going through an introduction to Proverbs, okay? We'll talk about the author, the date, the setting, the genre. We'll try to define briefly what a proverb is, and then my favorite part will be to go over the purpose of Proverbs. So, the first item, who is the author? Okay, should be fairly obvious, but at face value, there are actually three authors to the book of Proverbs, okay? The very first chapter, very first verse, it says, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Okay, Solomon, we know he was the son of David, okay? His mother was Bathsheba. Okay, if you know the story of David and Bathsheba, David committed adultery, and then he went about arranging for the killing of her husband Uriah. And out of that relationship, that sad relationship, came Solomon. Okay, and I want to mention something about David as it relates to Solomon. The sad thing about David is that after his sinful actions, his life would never be the same. Okay, if you read 2 Samuel and even the beginning of 1 Kings, his life was never quite the same as it was before, okay? His life was marked by problem after problem after problem. Just to give you a few. Amnon, who is one of his sons, he rapes his half-sister Tamar. Absalom, another son, he's the full sibling of Tamar. He ends up killing Amnon in revenge. David never quite got a handle on that situation. So Absalom, he builds up this anger against David. He tries to take over the kingdom. Okay. Absalom ends up dying in battle. And then shortly thereafter, a man named Sheba tries to rebel and take over the kingdom. Later, in a different point of time, David wants to take a census of the fighting men in Israel, which God had forbidden. Okay. And as a result of David's actions, there was a plague. It killed a lot of people in Israel because of him, because of David. Then, in the beginning of 1 Kings, another son named Adonijah, he tried to become king, even though he knew that Solomon was going to be the next king, okay? A lot of family drama. A lot. I sometimes think we have drama in our family, and they just don't match up to David's problems. Okay, but David's life was full of problems after his major sins, his big sins of adultery and murder. So we can certainly see that David, he suffered a lot as a consequence of his sins. And God told him that he was going to suffer for what he did. But I mention this because in one way or another, Solomon would have been aware of these things to some extent, depending on his age, right? So my point is that things like greed, the importance of family, dishonesty, and different topics that we'll talk about would have been very important for Solomon growing up. Because he would have seen very negative examples. So I think that he probably gained wisdom through this family drama, okay? But we also know what about Solomon? That he specifically asked God for wisdom when God came to him in a dream. He asks him, what do you want, Solomon? I'll give you anything. He says, I want discernment. I want to know how to guide these people, right? And then later, 1 Kings 4:32 says that Solomon ended up writing about 3,000 Proverbs. That's a lot. Does anybody know how many Proverbs we have written here in the book of Proverbs? Any guesses? What? No? The whole book. Okay. About 800. So that's less than a third, right? About almost a fourth of the total number of Proverbs that he wrote. Okay. But so Solomon, before he also committed sins, he went into idolatry. Okay. He was renowned, though, before that for his wisdom. Okay, leaders would come from all over. You think of the Queen of Sheba, right? She came to hear the wisdom that God had given him. Okay, so that was one of the authors. He is the main author. But besides Solomon, there are two other authors of Proverbs. Okay, in Proverbs 30, the name Agur is mentioned. Also in Proverbs 31, King Lemuel, however you want to say that, is also another author. Sadly, we don't know much about these two other men. We don't know if they lived before Solomon's time, maybe during his time, if they're friends of his. We just don't know. So I can't really give you information on those two. I do also want to mention briefly that there are always, talking about authorship, there's always liberal scholars out there that will try to say whoever we traditionally believe to have been an author of the Bible, they'll always say, no, really, he didn't write it, okay? And the same is true for Proverbs. There are scholars who would like to say, no, it was written hundreds of years later. Maybe one day in Sunday school we'll talk about these different theories, but I'm not going to go through that here, okay? But I think we can take this, and as commentators say, we can take this at face value that Solomon said he wrote it. We can believe that he wrote it. Okay. So now getting into the date and the setting of its writing. Okay. So the vast majority of the church over the years has believed that Solomon was the main author. So we can say that Proverbs was written around the 900s, sometime in the 900s BC. Okay. It's an old book. Now, as for the two men, Agur and Lemuel, again, we don't know when they lived. Okay. Another thing related to the date. Okay. In Proverbs 25 to 29, it says that the men of Hezekiah compiled these Proverbs. They did not write them, but they compiled them. Hezekiah, King Hezekiah, lived in the approximately 700s to 600s BC. Okay. Now, Solomon wrote these other Proverbs found in these chapters, but they weren't put together in the same place, the same book, until around 700 BC. Okay, it would be sort of like if you could imagine writing a book on the history of Oneonta, right? Maybe you have pictures of the city from one person dating to such and such a year. Maybe in a separate place, in a separate writing, you have written accounts of what life was like in Oneonta during whatever year. You have different accounts, you have different records and photos of things scattered in different places. Okay? But you come along, and what do? You put them together in one book so they're more organized. Okay? That's what happened basically in chapters 25 to 29. These proverbs were floating out there in different scrolls, okay? And somebody under Hezekiah, they came together and they put them together in one place. It's sort of like what Edith is doing with the history of the church out there in the hallway. Go look at it if you haven't. But she's taking, you know, things. Am I right, Edith? You're taking things scattered in different places. She's putting it on, not in a book, but on a wall. So it's the same idea, okay? The setting of how these proverbs were written. Okay, conservative Bible-believing scholars agree that these proverbs were written in a court setting, a royal setting, because Solomon was a king when he wrote these proverbs. There are also some proverbs that, you know, that point, that specifically apply to leadership, okay? And it would make sense that a king wrote proverbs on leadership, okay, not some other source. Those who try to eliminate Solomon as the author, they would rather say that these proverbs were written in other settings, okay? Some say that the proverbs are actually sayings from ordinary common people, meaning you would hear these things in houses, right? Just a common household sayings. Okay. Others would say that teachers in schools composed these proverbs. There's evidence, though, that so Egypt during this time period had schools. They were known for having schools. Israel did not have schools during this time period. Okay. So we believe that these proverbs were written in a court setting. Genre. Going on to genre, the book of Proverbs is considered wisdom literature. Okay. Who can name for me two other works of wisdom literature in the Bible? Ecclesiastes, one other, Job. They try to help you out there. Ecclesiastes and Job are two other examples of wisdom literature, okay? Also along with genre, much of Proverbs is poetry, okay? So I want to say one important thing about poetry. Anytime you read poetry, poetry is not interpreted like narrative is, okay? If you remember back to your school days, learning about different types of writings, okay? An example of this, chapter 8 of Proverbs, okay, we'll actually talk about this the next 2 weeks. It's the personification of wisdom, okay? Solomon describes wisdom as if it were a lady, okay? But we know that wisdom is not a person. Wisdom is a concept, okay? But poetry uses things like personification. It uses parallelism, and there's different things that you probably learned back in school days. Not considering the genre has led to different problems and even heresies in the past. I'll give you just one example. One example, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a group of Russian Orthodox believers that they went too far with this personification of wisdom. Some say that they almost made wisdom a fourth member of the Trinity. Okay, so that's taking it too far. That's an extreme example. But all that to say that genre is indeed important when we're reading through the Bible. Okay. Now, in regards to wisdom literature, I know we're going through some details. Probably not all of you like going through these details, but I think it's important. Now, in regards to wisdom literature, okay, it's interesting. I certainly found this interesting. Proverbs and works on wise sayings were rather common in this region during that time period. Okay. Mesopotamia, which is now modern day Syria, Iraq, Jordan. Okay. They had other works of wisdom literature. Egypt was also known for its wisdom literature. Okay. And a lot of Proverbs shares common characteristics with writings from other areas. Okay. For example, in the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, we see this common phrase, my son, listen to me, my son, listen to such and such, okay? In Egypt and Mesopotamia, this was common. This was a common stylistic form in their writings, okay? One example called the Instructions of Shurupak, okay? It's the oldest piece of wisdom literature that we have, okay? It was written in about 2500 BC, okay? We see sayings from a father to his son, in practical areas of life, okay? It's actually available online if you have interest in that. Some of it sounds very similar to Proverbs, okay? So this was written about 1,500 years before Solomon. There's another book called Instruction of Amenemope that was from Egypt, also available online. A lot of... So in Proverbs 22:17 to 24:22, you'll get into a section there. It says 30 sayings of the wise. It's the same format as the other book, Instruction of Amenemope. Okay. It's not identical, but let me say, you know, I think it would be fair to say that Solomon would have had a lot of access to wisdom literature over different time periods. The main difference, though, if you just remember this, okay, the main difference, though, is that Solomon writes from a worldview centered on the God of the Bible. Okay, these other sources write from the perspective of polytheism, of different gods, many multiple gods. So it's very possible that Solomon maybe borrowed ideas, okay, from other sources, but he adapted them to his worldview, our worldview, where Yahweh, God, is king. Okay, very important. Just like us, we can sometimes do that. It depends on the topic, but we can sort of sometimes take things from the world and adapt them to our worldview. Okay, very good example. Amazing Grace. How many of you know the hymn Amazing Grace? Raise your hand. Everybody, we all know it, okay? The melody, the tune of that song came from a secular song called New Britain, okay? But yet, that melody, that tune was eventually paired with the lyrics of the hymn that we all know, okay? That's an example, but all right. So next, what is a proverb? What is a proverb? Okay, some of you might like this. This is for Ruth and Giselle mainly. The word for proverb in Hebrew is mashal. Mashal, the plural is Mishle. The title of this book is Mishle. So next time any of you see Pastor Gary Bone Break, you can impress him with your Hebrew, right? But besides the jokes, a proverb by definition is a short, concise statement that expresses a general truth. A short, concise statement that expresses a general truth, okay? One commentator... This is based on the Hebrew origin of the word. I'm not going to get into that. Ruth and Giselle can do that with Gary. They suggest that the purpose of a proverb is to compel readers to compare their lives with the truth of the proverb being considered. Okay. Now, let me give a word of advice with these proverbs. This is very important. Notice that I said a proverb expresses a general truth. A general truth. You need to discern when a certain proverb may apply to a given situation. Does that make sense? Okay, you cannot use all proverbs in all situations. Okay, as an example, Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, turns away anger. Okay, is that always true without exception? That a gentle answer always turns away anger? No, thank you. Is that jam? Yeah, thank you, Carol. No, you need to use discernment in when to give a gentle answer. However, as a general principle, yes, it is wise to give a gentle answer. There are times, depending on the situation, when speaking softly will not work. There are times, and I can give you examples, like in the first chapter of Titus, for example. He tells Titus to rebuke these false teachers firmly, okay? There are times when someone needs to hear a strong, a firm word, not a gentle one, okay? So we must be careful to not misapply proverbs, okay? So that is more or less a brief description of a proverb and its usage. Okay, let me mention this as sort of a side note, along with this, you know, genre, style of writing. You look, if you see chapters 1 to 9, and this is more for your information, chapters 1 to 9, there is a style of writing there that's longer than short, concise statements. It's like you'd call it longer admonitions, sort of. And going back to the cultural setting of the book, it's been said that those longer prose-type chapters, 1 to 9, it's more characteristic of Egyptian wisdom literature and those of... chapter 10 and onwards, these short little verses, that's more characteristic of a Mesopotamian influence. But that was just more of a side note. All right, let's get into the purpose of Proverbs. This is what I was waiting for. I'm talking about the purpose of the book, not of the style of writing. Okay, the purpose of the book of Proverbs. Okay, why was Proverbs written? All right, thankfully, Solomon tells us in the first chapter. So let's read chapter 1, verses 1 to 7. Proverbs 1, verses 1 to 7. Okay, give you a few seconds to get there. Proverbs 1, verses 1 to 7. All right. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Okay. Now starting verse 2. Again, we're talking now about the purpose of Proverbs. Solomon tells us, very straightforward, this book was written to impart what? Wisdom, instruction, and understanding. Who remembers what my little personal definition of wisdom is? Who remembers?
Doing what God
wanted. Yeah, living life God's way. Thank you, whoever said that. Living life God's way. Solomon wants to help us live life God's way. Okay, very straightforward. Now, instruction, he says he wants to help us get instruction. What he simply means there is that the book instructs us, it teaches us how to acquire wisdom. Okay, very straightforward. We are to read Proverbs to gain wisdom, instruction, and understanding. We are to read this book because we all need help. I think we would agree. We all need help in knowing how to live life God's way. We need help. In verse 3, he goes on, the book was written to give instruction in prudent behavior. Other versions say instruction in wise behavior. Our behavior is extremely important, if you didn't know that. What you do and what you say show a lot about you. I remember listening to a video. There was a church. They were grilling this group of church musicians on how they could justify playing and singing on here in church on Sunday morning, but playing or singing at not so great nightclubs on Friday and Saturday nights. And I remember that one of the singers, she said the following to defend herself. She said, "What I do is not who I am. What I do is not who I am." That's a completely false statement. And I hope you agree. You know, what you do, how you behave, it shows who you are. Absolutely shows who you are. What else are we supposed to go by? I can't read your thoughts. All I have to go by is your behavior, what you do and what you say. Behavior is extremely important. The book of Proverbs is deeply concerned with our behavior, which encompasses our actions and words, okay? Still in verse 3, as it relates to our behavior, we will see how to behave in such a way that's considered just, right, and fair. I think those three words, just, right, and fair, they dominate a lot of discussions in the social and political realm these days. Okay? And obviously, people have different definitions of what is just, right, and fair. I remember when the kids moved in with us, whenever we would discipline Ray, he would say, "That's not fair." Right? That was in the very beginning. He doesn't say that anymore. Well, actually, yes, it is fair to discipline you if you're not acting right and the other kids are. Okay? That's a silly example. But at the end of the day, all that matters is knowing what God says is just, right, and fair. Okay? Proverbs will help us show us his standards and help us align our behaviors with what God says is just, right, and fair. Verse 4, we learn of the audience, the intended audience of the book of Proverbs. This is important. Okay? Firstly, Proverbs is meant to give wisdom to the naive, the simple, or the uncommitted. Okay, there are different labels given to people in the book of Proverbs. There's the righteous person, the wise person, the fool, the sluggard, the scoffer, and the simple. Okay, the simple is the naive or the gullible person. They are unstable. They are, as what one commentator says, empty-headed. They don't think a whole lot about what they do or follow. Okay, one theologian named Derek Kidner, He has another good commentary if you are interested in that. He said this, though, about the empty-headed. The one who is empty-headed is soon to be wrong-headed. Okay? You need to think about what you're doing, about who you follow, what you do, how you behave. Okay? Proverbs, now they still classify the simpleton as a fool. Okay? But this type of fool, the simpleton, is not one who is completely opposed to correction or being brought to the path of wisdom. Okay, they're still a fool, but they're a different type of fool. Okay. This simple person, as the label suggests, they simply go along with what others have to say, right? There are, unfortunately, a lot of people like that. Naive, they're gullible, okay? It's just like in the movie Pinocchio, the old one, the old version. Pinocchio's father tells him to go to school, and what happens along the way? He meets a fox named Honest John. And Honest John tricks him into going to a puppet theater for money. Pinocchio is the perfect example of a simpleton. Poor Pinocchio. He just went along with whatever sounded best. Would you agree with me? Yeah, right? If there are many Americans just like that. Whoever is loudest, whoever sounds best, that's who they're going to follow. Okay. If you've watched evangelists like Ray Comfort or you watch debates online, what you typically hear are people just spouting out things that in their mind sounded nice when they heard it. Okay. They haven't really thought about what they believe or what they think. It just sounded nice whenever they heard it. So, oh, that sounds nice. I'm going to believe that. Okay. There are people that just go with the flow. Okay. But in any case, the book of Proverbs is trying to help those who are simple, who are in that category, that sad category, those who are gullible. But guess what? God doesn't want us to be persuaded by every argument, does he? He wants us to move away from gullibility. Okay. He wants us to use our heads. Okay. Proverbs will help us with that. Now, still in verse 4, another audience, still talking about the audience. Proverbs is meant for the young. It's meant for the young. I don't know if many of us think of Proverbs in that way. Okay. When we teach kids, what do we usually talk to them about? Talk about Genesis, talk about Moses, talk about Elijah, Joshua, the big ones, right? But interestingly, Solomon says that this book is meant for the young. Okay. Meant for the youth. Proverbs 22:15 says that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Okay. We are all sinners by choice and by nature. Okay, thanks to Adam and Eve, our first inclination, even in our childhood, is to sin. Okay, we do it naturally. We're experts at sinning. But God wants parents to do what? He wants us to come alongside our kids and even our grandkids, okay, to teach them wisdom. If you don't teach them wisdom, if you don't correct them, then they will surely remain foolish. In fact, if you don't make it your job to teach your kids, your grandkids, I guarantee you that society will. I guarantee you that. I promise you that. Okay. But Proverbs is meant for the youth. We should talk to younger people about the topics we find here. The importance of words, generosity, laziness, how to use money, themes we find in Proverbs. Okay. There are adult themes in Proverbs, but it's important that we talk to kids and grandkids, even great grandkids, some of you, that we talk about such topics. Right? Let your kid, your grandchild, your great grandchild hear from your mouth the dangers of adultery, the dangers of gossip, the dangers of laziness, the dangers of dishonesty. Okay? Again, if you don't teach your kids, your grandkids, then someone else will who probably doesn't know the Lord. Okay? If you love the Lord, it needs to be a priority to teach your kids or your grandkids. Lastly, the book of Proverbs in verse 5-6, it says it's meant for the wise. Book of Proverbs is meant for the wise. Okay, wisdom is a lifelong process, isn't it? Learning how to do life God's way takes a lifetime to learn. It's a lifetime to learn. And even at the end, we still won't get it completely right, will we? Right? But it says that for those who are already wise, they can study Proverbs and increase their wisdom. If you think that in terms of wisdom or godliness, you've already arrived. You've already got it all. I can guarantee you that you don't. Right? And remember, wisdom is situational. We said that. It's contextual. Depends upon what situation you're in. What works in one context may not work in every context. Okay? So it's complicated at times to know what God may want in any given situation. Okay, it would be easy if God had written a 20,000-page manual with every single possible life situation, with every single written solution, but we don't have that, okay? Many times we have to use precepts, concepts found in the Bible, okay? And those precepts are sufficient, by the way. They're sufficient, but acquiring wisdom takes skill. It takes time, okay? It requires direction from God. And all this to say that a wise person recognizes that they can always use more wisdom. All of us can use more wisdom. Okay, none of us are wise enough to say, I've got it all. All right. So lastly, we get to verse 7. Verse 7 is foundational for really the whole book, not just this today's sermon, but the whole book. Okay, it is the foundation of this book. And if there's one verse you take away from Proverbs, I would ask that you remember this one. Okay, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Don't leave out the second part of that verse. Okay, we all remember the first part, but we leave out the second part. Okay, the first part of that verse said another way. Living right begins how? With honoring God. Living right begins with honoring God. Okay, so think of that. That's just the beginning. It says it begins with honoring God, with loving God. Okay. Once you start honoring God, then you can begin to acquire wisdom. Okay. I want you to understand that apart from God, we are fools. I hope you all know that we are foolish without God. Okay. Psalm 53 says, the fool says in his heart that there is no God. The fool says that. 1 Corinthians 3:19, the wisdom of this world is foolishness to God. All right. If you're living by the world's standards, rejecting God's precepts for your life, the Bible says that you're foolish. You're foolish. And if you don't believe me, just look at the world around us. Just look at the world around us. Just look at the mess and confusion we get ourselves into on a daily basis, right? We have broken families all over the place, not just in Otsego County, right? People and kids are confused about their gender. Young women are frequently told it's okay to abort a baby, even if it's just for convenience. You never know who's telling the truth anymore. Young couples are afraid to get married because of commitment, so they live together in fornication for years, and the list goes on and on and on. We're foolish without God. We're foolish. And this is because the world in general, we naturally reject God and we are fools for doing so. And because we're foolish, millions of people pay the price for it. Many of which are kids, which don't have, many of which are kids. Don't think for a second that we don't need wisdom in 2025. We need it. I hope you agree with me. And the saddest thing about all this is that many Americans know that we're messed up. You talk to people, they'll say, America's in a bad place. They know that. And yet they still refuse to turn to God. They still refuse to turn to God. That is the epitome of foolishness. You know you have a problem. God says, come to me. I have the answer. And yet you still turn him away. That is foolish. You cannot acquire wisdom and understanding and insight without fearing the Lord first. You can't. Right living begins once you start loving God. But if you're a fool, as Proverbs says, you reject the idea that there's a specific way that God wants you to live. Right? And if you live that way foolishly, I promise you that you yourself and others will pay the price for your foolishness. We see that all around us, okay? And we'll all see in the coming weeks that fools are characterized by destructive behaviors, okay? My prayer for us is that we would not copy the foolishness we see all around us, okay? This morning, do you fear the Lord? Do you honor him? Do you reverence him? Do you love him? So in conclusion here, right? I feel like I just got started, but in conclusion here, I know the first part of this passage was about the background. It's about the background, okay? I know some of you don't like the details, but learn from it, okay? It's important to interpret the rest of the book, okay? But I hope you see the importance of the purpose of this book, okay? I hope you see why I chose this book, because we need wisdom. Just like Tammy Thurber talked about yesterday, crafting a wise response in a chaotic world. She really set me up for today. Without knowing it. I have to tell her that. But anyway, but hopefully by the end of our time spent in Proverbs, we'll be a little bit wiser. I hope that. Hopefully some of us will no longer be labeled as simple or foolish, okay? But just remember, above all else, going forward, the foundation for this book is found in verse 7, okay? The fear, the honoring, the reverencing of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction, okay? And again, if you have not begun with that first step of fearing the Lord, if you have not taken that step, please talk to one of us. Talk to me. Talk to Andy. Talk to George. Talk to Steve. Please, let's get that right before we move on. Okay? All right, so I'm going to end here.